Welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. We have a great show for you today, so stay tuned. We're going to knock your socks off with an interview with Jean-Martin Fortier, who is the celebrated author and farmer of places like Ferme Quatre Temps and books like The Market Gardener. And he spoke last week in St. Anne de Bellevue. He spoke just over the weekend on Saturday at the Natural Moss St. Anne event in St. Anne de Bellevue. And that's all connected to the St. Anne de Bellevue Farmers Market as well, Marché St. Anne. So yeah, so I sat down with Jean-Martin after his talk and we did an interview. So that's coming up in the show, so stay tuned. But first, we're going to start with some music from Stevie Wonder. And it's Tuesday, so we're going to play his tune, Tuesday Heartbreak.
Tuesday Heartbreak. hardly seem to be unfair, 'cause you say that you found a man. Tuesday breakup, guess you just don't care, 'cause you found you another man. I wanna be with you when you're all alone. I wanna be with you when you feel you got another man. Didn't see, oh baby, alright. I wanna be with you when the night time comes. I wanna be with you when the daytime comes. I wanna stay a baby, little baby, baby with you. Tuesday heartbreak seem to be a drag when you know that you love her specially. Catch up, baby. Catch up with my dreams. Maybe then I can see you all the time.
And that was Stevie Wonder with the tune Tuesday Heartbreak. Of course, it is Tuesday, so what an apropos song to play. And that's from Stevie Wonder's album Talking Book, which goes back to 1972, a year after I was born. So welcome to Ecolibrium, an environmental radio show here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We cover all kinds of issues related to ecology and living a more ecological style of life or a commitment to ecological principles in people's lives. And for me, the interview I'm going to play now really touches on all those things. And that's Jean-Martin Fortier, who is a very well-known farmer here in Quebec, an educator, farm educator, and author. He is the author of the book, The Market Gardener. He also has something called The Market Gardener's Masterclass, which is an online training program. And he started with his wife, Maudelaine Desroches, a farm called Les Jardins de la Grelinette, which really tries to achieve maximum yields on quite small surfaces. He's also involved with still the Ferme Quatre Temps, or sometimes referred to as FQT, which sells, I believe, still at the Jean Talon Market here in Montreal on the weekends. And he's got a number of projects also in the works coming up, and he talked about some of that during our interview, which we did on Saturday. So, in collaboration with the Ecolibrium Radio podcast, which you can listen to on Spotify. So this interview that I'm going to play now will be up soon on the Ecolibrium Radio podcast on Spotify. We're going to play this interview with Jean-Martin Fortier, who is, as I said, a well-known Quebec farmer and an author of a number of books, both in English and in French. And I sat down with him after he spoke at the event Naturellement Sainte Anne in St. Anne de Bellevue on Saturday. So here is that interview now. Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and I'm here with Jean-Martin Fortier, who recently spoke at Naturellement Sainte Anne in Sainte Anne de Bellevue. And he is a well-known farmer in the Quebec area, and he is also the author of The Market Gardener and a number of other books in French. And his farm has an intensive course. So there's a lot going on with Jean-Martin, so we're going to hear about it today. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Very good. So I guess maybe we start off with what's the current projects you're involved in right now?
Well, I still teach the master class. It's the online course. It's actually now in 88 countries, and it's a course that I have developed over the last 6 years, so 5 years of filming and editing. And it's basically, the course is step by steps of all the things that I do on my farm, going into the nitty gritty details of each of the crops, how to seed, how to keep them clean, how to cultivate, how to, you know, prep the soil, all of the details. So that's occupying a big part of my time, and I have a whole team with me that's developing this. We just launched a scholarship, so there's a lot of work that goes into that. So we have 20 people that will get free access to the master class. And it's a worldwide launch. Every time we do something, it's in English and it's in French and it's in all these countries. So the web allows us to do that, but there's a lot of work that goes into coordinating that. So I'm kind of helping out on that end. And I'm still involved at the other farm project, which is the FQT farm, the farm that perhaps some people in Montreal would know about when we're at Jean Talon Farmers Market Saturday and Sunday, Ferme Quatre Temps. I'm helping transition. The leadership is not me full time anymore. I've worked with the person that took my place as the main farmer there for the vegetable part, and so I'm freeing up space and time to actually open a restaurant. And it's kind of the first time that I talk about this, but it's going to be a farm to table restaurant near where I live. And I'm developing four-season farming to supply the restaurant year-round with local ingredients.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And was that always somewhat in the back of your mind as something you wanted to do, or did it evolve over time?
Yeah, well, a lot of my work over the years has been working with chefs, really developing an expertise about how to really supply them efficiently, also looking into different cultivars, really looking at what are, you know, being at their service for all these years, going into kitchen, understanding how they operate, what their needs are. It really got me fascinated by that whole universe. And at one point, I didn't want to go into Montreal anymore. So I wanted to come back home in the Eastern Townships where I am and where my home farm is. And yeah, when I decided that, it became clear that my wife and I, you know, after not working together for all these years, it was when you have too many roosters in the hen. So I was like, I need my own project.
For sure. And I guess always driving into Montreal and doing these deliveries, that can get taxing after a while.
Yeah. And then, you know, I loved all these years that I spent in Montreal, going to these restaurants and meeting these chefs and these sous chefs and the whole culinary, you know, in Montreal, the scene is really nice. But for me, like, I live in the country. I don't really have any interest in going into the city. And so I'm like, and then the food scene is developing where I'm at, and I want to be a part of that. So for me, it's pretty natural to do what we're doing. It's a big, big project. It's going to take a lot of time to manifest, but growing year round also is a passion. I just published a book about that, and I've learned so much over the years. Now I'm putting all of this together in a new context, and I'm getting some support to develop new ways of farming year round. And that's something that I'm really excited about.
The books that you've written, I guess it's a little bit like the courses, right? You're trying to come up with a model that works to educate.
So people know me or of my work because of my book, The Market Gardener. I published that in 2012. And that The Market Gardener is a how-to book on small-scale vegetable farming on, you know, 2 acres or less. Farming without a tractor, doing a lot of succession cropping, and the whole thing was about sharing the principles, the practices that made my farm financially successful, but going into some details about how to organize the farm. So it's a beginner's book, especially for people who want to get into farming, don't have a lot of money. They read that, it's accessible, you can do it, you can go to farmers market. And my book really comes into play and is educating people about how to go about it and not go too far off. And so that's how people got to know me. And I toured a lot with the book, teaching what we were doing. And eventually that translated into me not wanting to travel anymore. So that became filming the masterclass. So that took 5 years. And now with the Winter Farming Handbook, what I wanted to do was, again, share what I've learned over four-season farming, the ways to do it, what we've learned.
And the title of that one is?
The Nordique. It's actually going to be the Nordique Winter Harvest Book Handbook.
Okay. But the French title is?
C'est le maraîchage nordique.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually translating it right now in English, and it's going to come out with New Society Publisher probably next spring or next spring, I think.
That's great. And have you noticed, like, I guess take me back to when you were a student at McGill and where the movement was back then compared to now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the same hopes and aspirations are there today. Like, I'm 44 now, so it's actually, I'm kind of removed a bit from university. I mean, we have a lot of interns and apprentices that come to the farm, so I kind of get a vibe for that, but...
But did you think you were going to go into farming when you were studying at McGill?
I was studying the MSc, the McGill School of Environment. And for me, it was about ecology, environmental science. It was about activism. It was about fighting, you know, for a better future. And farming became how that manifested for me, having my hands in the ground. I didn't know nothing about farming when I was at university. I had never been on a farm. My parents weren't hippies. It's just farmers market weren't around. It just wasn't a thing back then. There was the People's Potato at Concordia, and that got me into food politics, and that got me educated on these things. And then from there, I learned, but it was really when I started to work on a farm in New Mexico that I really got it, how small-scale farming is really changing the world by making communities more resilient, by having a lifestyle that I liked. And that was really my motivation to keep on farming. And then over the years, it's been such a interesting challenge to learn new things, to apply them. The great thing about farming, it's never easy, but it's always, there's you can see the results. It doesn't take 5 years. It's like you seed something, you harvest it, and then you sell it. And then the way you organize your things, you can be creative. You can play with your piece of land. You can move rocks around. You can build a pond. You can build a greenhouse. You learn how to work with tools. It's there's a lot of parts involved. There's your brain. There's your heart. There's your skills. There's your hands. And then there's the reward, because when you go to farmers market, then you meet people. So it's very social also. So for me, it was really... that made it, even if it's hard financially in some times, it made it worthwhile. And still today, like, you know, I've started a tool company, I've started an online course, like I said, I've started different adventures, a software company for people that want to learn how to crop plan, and I'm invested and involved with these projects. But for me, if I'm not farming for real, it all of this doesn't really make any sense. I like the rapid reward effort of farming.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the Quebec scene, for you, it seemed like you came in at the right time in terms of, you know, the media wanting mm-hmm. to pay attention and these opportunities and so on. You know, what would you say about the Quebec scene in that respect?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was, you know, you're always building on the shoulders of other people. So there's definitely people like Jamie Quinn and Nora Quinn. There's always people before us that had paved the way. You know, I'm here, we're sitting together, Ryan, with my friends from Tournesol Farm. You know, we were at university together. And that's 20 years ago, and we're still friends, and they've made amazing projects, seed farms, their farms. But I think when I came into the public scene, it was ripe, but I came in with a different attitude. Not a good attitude, a different attitude. I wasn't complaining about what wasn't working. I was being very enthusiastic about something that was working and that was alive. People following in our leads, starting really smaller farms, and then really pushing that and showing that people were successful. I had a TV show on for 2 seasons, showing the work that we were doing, how brilliant it was.
What was it called?
Les Fermiers. It was, it's still playing on Uni, so it's on public TV. You know, Thursday night, 8 o'clock, it's primetime TV, and it's an hour of slow TV of cameras following us, like prepping big orders for the chefs, going into the restaurants, talking with the chefs, getting feedback, coming back to the farm. And that really got people interested, because I wasn't there complaining about Monsanto. I wasn't complaining about this, the government, the MAPAC. I was just showing, hey, this is happening. This is cool. This is where you want to get your food from. And these are the bright young kids that are, you know, pushing this revolution. And I think that really caught the attention of a lot of people. And that's the Growers & Co. magazine that I gave you. That's what it is. It's a magazine where we showcase how beautiful and really intelligent and really important the work of a lot of young and not so young people in the farming scene is.
And you were saying today in your talk that it was funny that a lot of these skills or ways of growing can be traced back, at least in the farming you do, to France.
Yeah.
But you've gone over there and been celebrated as somebody doing these things, but really, you kind of learned them maybe from Elliot Coleman. Elliot Coleman learned them from
the French.
Yeah,
it's a, not, and if people are listening to this, if there's one kind of interesting tidbit I can say is, like, anything pre-World War II is definitely worth studying with regards to farming, because that's really when the chemicals came into play, and that's really when mechanization, tractors, these were all developed after tanks. And the chemical industry that was involved with the warfare, the nitrogen for the bomb, that's what became the fertilizers. And so if you study farming books that predates, you know, 1940, there's a lot of really interesting keys there. And so the old French book, the old English books, even the old American books on farming. And for me, anytime I would go to France, I go to those libraries and I have access to farming books written in the 1800s where they're doing exactly what we're doing, because they didn't have tractors. And, you know, up until the 20s, they were almost not mechanized, and then they started to have two-wheel tractors, smaller tractors, but all the tools that I use on my tool shed, they're the same. Hose, broad forks.
And you don't use animals, and there was some animal use, I guess, back in those days.
The original market gardeners were farming 2 acres, and that was it.
No need for animals.
No, but they did, no time.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have greenhouses then. They had cloche. So they were individual, cloche, their size of a bowl, they would put over the lettuce. They were glass bells. So each lettuce would have a glass bell over it. That's how they would protect them from frost or grow them earlier.
Or even from bugs, I guess?
Mostly for weather, because okay. they wanted to supply the Paris market year-round, and they did. Like, Paris in the 1800 was fully supplied year-round by thousands and thousands of small farms. And that was like a city of 4 million.
Right.
And that was pre-trucking things, goods from, pre-refrigeration. So when I say that the answers are in the past, and these thousands of small farms were highly, highly more productive than my farm, because they had developed skill sets that even today are unmatched. So Elliot Coleman was studying that, and then he put a lot of that in his game plan. His game plan is what I took when I started, and then I developed my own stuff. But when I started to go back to France and reading his older books, it's been really enlightening in the last few years to learn from that.
And Elliot had a family connection back to France?
No, I don't know if he would listen to this, but I think he had a woman that he really liked in Paris. He keeps saying me, Paris is the only city I liked. And one day he's told me that so many times, and I'm like, why? He said, oh, there was this girl that he really liked. And that's how the world goes sometimes.
There you go, for sure. We're definitely in a time period. We've had a pandemic. We're in a period where inflation is going up. People are starting to realize that maybe the food supply isn't so dependable, especially when it's coming from halfway around the world. Do you feel there's an urgency in terms of food security where people need to start being more concerned about growing their own food?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. There's a lot of us that inside we know that what we're doing is important but it wasn't really relevant. But I've known since I'm really in my early 20s that the work that I do in farming really is important for whatever is going to happen next. And now that I'm a bit older, I realize that some people are prepared for what's going to happen. Some people are totally not prepared. And that's going to create a lot of civil unrest, which I'm really scared about. And that's why education on food sovereignty is really, really important, because in the next few years, the food that gets trucked in or flied in from all over the world, it's going to be so expensive and people will have less cash that it's going to become impossible for this system to keep on going. So we're going to naturally need to come back to something that's more local. And that's an opportunity to just live differently, more in line with how things grow here in Quebec.
And Quebec has the potential. It has the agricultural land, but so much of the land is used to grow corn to feed to animals.
Yeah.
So do you have...
Or tractors.
Right.
To make fuel with the corn.
Right.
Which is nonsense.
Right. So, I mean, I think if a transition needed to occur, the land is there, would you say?
The land is there. I'm not sure the seeds are there. That's a big, big issue. You're friends with Dan here. You could talk about that with Dan, but I'm not sure the seeds are there. So that would involve us being much more aware of how to save seeds. The land is there. The water can be a problem. So having farming techniques where water conservation is important. And also just kind of reinventing how people shop. Like, the supermarkets are not going to be, they're going to be filled with mostly industrial things. All the fresh food won't be there at one point, in my opinion. Or it's going to be from factory farms, hydroponic farms, that, you don't want to eat that food because all the nutrients are not in the food. It's even worse than industrial farming outside. So anyway, I see these shifts that are going to occur, and I'm not discouraged by them. I just feel that's like a it's an evolution of, it's like a one step backward, you know. It's kind of funny, like we're going to come back to something that's more common sense
on a human scale,
and on a natural scale, like cycles. Like for me, the most revolutionary young person today is, because there's a lot of issues that you can be working on, but like Dan was saying, you know, you can be changing your food habits today, just like that. And eating in season for me is really an act of, you know, uprising.
Yeah, it's a direct action.
Yeah, and it makes sense, and that's what we need. We need to make sense of whatever's there, and then nature is never wrong. And eating in season is a celebration. It's amazing. It's like stretching, you know, stretching. You can't overstretch. You know, it's always good. And some people never stretch. Some people stretch a little bit. Some people stretch a lot. But it's kind of a positive thing, you know.
Absolutely. Do you, you know, what keeps you motivated every day to continue to do what you're doing?
That's a great question. I'm really motivated by the first reason why I got into farming. Like I said, you know, I've done many things. I had a TV show. I toured the world teaching, started a tool company, a magazine, writing books.
And was there a need to start the tool company?
Was a need to start the tool company because a lot of the tools that I use aren't available. And so a lot of people, especially gardeners, home gardeners, were like, well, where do you get those shoveling hose? Where do you get? Well, they come from Switzerland. Where do you get this broad fork? Well, you know, it comes from wherever. It's like, why don't we make them here? So we started to build those tools here in Quebec, distribute them under the brand Growers & Co., which was a project that I had in my heart for so long. And then there's a clothing company, because a lot of the clothes that we use in the field, they should be functional, but they're not. And so we started to design clothes. And, you know, people should check it out. It's a really cool company. But today, you know, I'm really interested in spending more time myself, by myself, in the garden. And so that's what I'm doing.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure.
And that was my interview with Jean-Martin Fortier recently, just this past Saturday, in St. Anne de Bellevue. We were actually at an event where he was speaking. And later on, he was talking with his friends, Fred Thériault and Dan Brisebois from the Ferme Tournesol. And so when he was mentioning Dan and Fred and all those people, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about the people from Ferme Tournesol, another great organic farming enterprise. And Jean-Martin also, of course, spoke at Naturalement Ste. Anne on September 10th in St. Anne de Bellevue, and a number of questions were asked from the audience afterward. So I'm going to play some of the responses to some of those questions, because they were recorded. So I actually asked him a question about why he used birdhouses in some of his farming, or why he encouraged biodiversity, and this was the response that he had to that question.
For me, nature has been was the reason I got into farming, because I was understanding that I could be doing applied ecology. Because at McGill, what I studied was ecological services, how to study them and how to monetize them, so that instead of building dams or you know, we could have restored areas that would do the same thing without spending the money. So I studied ecological services for 3 years. And then when I was farming, I realized that, hey, there's earthworms in the ground. And they're doing the work of tilling and plowing and shaping the soil. But if we don't destroy their habitat by using a rototiller. And so I got into that. And then I came up with lots of different techniques and tools to not harm the earthworms and still have, you know, soil that is loose and deep for us to plant into. Same goes for birds. Like for me, on the farms, we don't have tractors. And so for me, farming is not running an engine. Is I'm on my feet, I'm using hand tools, and I'm listening to birds. And that makes my work really enjoyable. So on the new farm at FQT, when I designed it, I wanted to have as many birds as possible. So we just build a lot of ecological niches everywhere, not just birdhouses, but planting shrubs and trees for them to have food for the whole year, and birdhouses. And you know, it's really amazing because for 2 years that farm was a construction site where we would, you know, the sound that you would hear was beep, beep, beep. And then you go there and what you hear are birds singing. And that's really amazing. And I think when the birds are singing and then we're taking the time to just appreciate the fact that birds are here to sing. Like, if birds were here singing today, it would be amazing. But that doesn't happen by chance. It happens by design. Somebody here needs to be thinking about birds. That's what we need to do. And that's where nature needs us, because it's really easy to destroy with an excavator. And we need an excavator to build back. So that's really what needs to happen. We need to have people involved in ecological design and restoring habitats and rewilding a lot of these places. Like,
and that was Jean-Martin Fortier's response to a question about using biodiversity and why he put up birdhouses at the Ferme Quatre Temps. And there was a student from McGill who asked Jean-Martin about the importance of research. So we're going to play that response to that question now.
Yeah, I think research is really important, because for somebody like myself that has been developing on his own at my own expense a lot of things, I can tell you, I'd much prefer to have a researcher come and give me some of these answers. And I think that's how it should be. I think the research needs to be applied research, and I think the people that are doing the research need to be closer to the people that are on the ground. That's really important. And I know that in the context of teaching, it's not always easy, but there needs to be efforts made to make sure that the people that are doing the research are working on the real questions, not just the surface questions, and really providing value and service to the people that really need those answers. And obviously, who funds the research is a question that needs to be really clear from the get-go. And so, how to grow peaches year-round? You know, that I'd love to have the answer to that. Which cultivar? How do I plant it? What works? What doesn't work? You know, save me 5 years of figuring it out. If research, you know, that's a simple answer. You know, but there's hundreds of questions like that. That, you know, if we want to be more self-sufficient in Quebec with our own food in agriculture, we'll need to really evolve in terms of what to grow, when, and stop thinking in terms of growing tomatoes year-round, because people just don't eat just tomatoes. They eat all sorts of different fruits, nuts, veggies, and so we need to be a lot more in tune with how to grow these. Speaking from the vegetable production side, because that's my work. But same thing with energy efficiency in building. A lot of the permaculture stuff that you can read about should be researched more to really come up with not just good ideas, but ideas that have been tested, trialed. The money needs to be understood, because nobody works in a vacuum. You know, I do a lot of ecological services to the earth, but in the end, if I'm not here making a lot of cash at farmers market, I'm not here tomorrow. So money is also important in these things. And economics, the emerging, like for me, when I was at McGill, what was great about it was that I was doing humanities and I was doing hard science, and we were looking at ecology from all sorts of different angles. And economics was a big part of it too. But it was always about globalized stuff. It was never about localized things, and I think that's where the solutions are.
And that was Jean-Martin Fortier's response to a question about the importance of research in universities. And in the same talk he was giving at the Natural Moss St. Anne event in St. Anne de Bellevue at the St. Anne de Bellevue Farmers Market, there was another question about how to get youth inspired to do farming. And so this is Jean-Martin's response to that question.
Yeah, I think the way to learn it is to work on farms in the summer. That's pretty much it. Because, you know, farming is not something that you can fantasize about. When you're in the fields and you're doing it day in, day out, you quickly figure out if that's something you want to do or not. And some people really, really like it. It's like it becomes somewhat addictive to just to be outside and to work the body and be physical and eat a lot of food. And you need to like that if you're going to be a farmer.
Yeah.
So, and then once that's kind of established, then studying farming is really interesting because, you know, for one, myself, I've read so many books on farming, but it all made sense because I was actually applying it. So that would be my advice. My mentor is Elliot Coleman, and he wrote the book that I kind of wrote from, and he's 85 now. And for him, Elliot, his big thing was that he went to France when he was a younger grower, and he saw growers that were farming like their grandfathers, and he would speak a little bit of French, and he would understand French, and he would read French. And so he brought a lot of this back to his farm, and then he wrote about it, and then he became probably the best-known farmer in the United States. And his work was very influential for thousands and thousands of market gardeners, including myself. And when my book came out and I went to France to talk about it, he wrote me a really long letter saying that it was kind of full circle, because for the French, what I teach is really something that they're like, wow, this is amazing. It's all new to them, but it's actually, it all comes from there. It kind of was lost, and then...
And that was Jean-Martin Fortier's response to a question about how to inspire youth in farming. And he also was talking about who his mentor was, Elliot Coleman, well-known American farmer. And the last response I'm going to play from his talk, which he gave in St. Anne de Bellevue this past Saturday, was about winter farming. It was Michel Girouard, actually, who asked the question about winter farming, and he recently came out with a book in French about Nordic farming or farming up north. And as you might have heard in the interview with him today, he talked about how the English translation of that book is coming out in the spring 2023, next year. So here is that response to that question.
First of all, you work with the biology of certain plants that are better adapted to frost. So it starts with that. Like anything that can't take a light frost, it's not really desirable. And then you work with shelters. So one greenhouse and then perhaps another greenhouse in the greenhouse. So that's a very passive way of just gaining climate gains and mitigating. When it's minus 15 inside the first house, it's minus 5 inside the second house, it's 1. And then adding some minimal heat into these houses, so heat that's either radiant from coming from the ground or on the floor with hot water, electricity that's being converted for heating but is really diffused on the ground with some lower tunnels above it. So really looking at ways, geothermal is another solution. But all of this needs to also make sense economically. So that's the... But we're getting there. There's a lot of cool things happening right now.
Do you use compost piles or anything in your greenhouse?
That's another option. That's how the old growers used to do it. They would dig 2 feet in the ground, they would put the manure, and then they would put soil and then plant into that. That's something that works. because if you have a layer and a double layer, and you have a hot soil for sure, but then that's a lot of work. And then we don't all have access to animals. And then the people that do, they usually want to keep their manure for their fields. So working with hot water or whatever else.
Very cool.
Yeah, but it starts with biology.
Right.
So anytime you're like, we're growing tomatoes year round, you're like, yeah, well, it's not really the purpose.
And that was Jean-Martin Fortier's response to a question from another farmer, Michel Jouard, who works at Les Jardins Caria, about Nordic farming or farming in the wintertime, even all four seasons. And of course, Jean-Martin Fortier talked about his new project, which is running a restaurant in Stanbridge East in the eastern townships. And that his farm, a farm that would be created there, would supply it all year round, all four seasons, with local food grown right there on the farm. So a true farm-to-table restaurant, perhaps on the horizon in Quebec. Not up and running yet, but hopefully very soon. So you've been listening to an interview here on Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM with Jean-Martin Fortier, who is a celebrated farmer and author of books like The Market Gardener. And Jean-Martin, of course, is well known for his work with Ferme des Quatre Temps, or FQT. And he's also known for his own farm, which he runs with his wife, Maud Hélène Desroches, and that's the farm Les Jardins de la Grelinette. All of these things about Jean-Martin can be found out by going to his website, which is jeanmartinfortier.com. And growers and company, they are also a great place to go and whether it's get the magazine or the tools or the clothes that are specially designed for farmers or market gardeners, that's at growers.co. So that's growers.co. And there's a lot there. And you can find links also from Jean-Martin Fortier's website, jeanmartinfortier.com. So yeah, so that's a look at Jean-Martin's work. And as I said, he's an author. He runs an online farm class, which is called the Market Gardener's Masterclass. And he also was behind the television program that ran for two seasons called Les Fermiers, which was broadcast on TV5 Monde. So you've been listening to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's 11:49 a.m. So we still have a little bit of time left in the show. So we're definitely going to play some music. And you can always email us at ecolibrium@ckut.ca. That is our website address. And you can, you know, email us with comments, with questions, with suggestions. And we are also on Facebook at facebook.com/EcolibriumCKUTMontreal. And as I said, we have an affiliated podcast on Spotify, which is easily searchable. You can just put in the search, the Ecolibrium Radio Podcast, which is different from the Ecolibrium Podcast because there is another podcast out there with the same name, but to distinguish our one, it is called the Ecolibrium Radio Podcast. You can also listen to this show again or share it with a friend by just going immediately to the CKUT website, which is ckut.ca, and then looking for the link to programming and archives. And then in the schedule, when that page opens up, you will see Ecolibrium on the Tuesday 11 a.m. time slot, and you can click on that, and then it opens up another window where you can listen to past shows. So that kind of gives you a rundown of all kinds of ways of getting in touch with the show. So there it is. And of course, here on Ecolibrium, lately we've been covering a lot about organic farming, about self-sufficiency, about growing your own food, And we'll continue to do that because we think there is a need for it. And there is a desire on people to know more about that. So you can be sure that more interviews in the coming weeks and months will be dedicated to that topic. And if you, like I said, have any comments or suggestions, then email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. So there's a great album by a famous drummer named Narada Michael Walden. He's still alive today, but I think he's quite older now. Maybe he's in his 60s. Maybe he's he's probably in his 70s because he's born in 1952. So he's probably 70 this year. That's right. He's 70 years old. So he came out with a couple of solo albums. You know, he was in a bunch of different bands as well, always like pretty amazing jazz fusion bands. And he had, I think, an album called The Sun Is Dancing. And I definitely love that album. It's, it's actually, what is this? The actual title is Garden of Love Light. He was kind of a spiritual guy, and he was into maybe a little bit the New Age movement. And in 1976, he came out with this album, Garden of Love Light. And one of the tunes, which is pretty funky, is called Saint and the Rascal. So we're going to play that now here on Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. Oh, yeah, that was Saint and the Rascal from the album Garden of Lovelight by Narada Michael Walden. And the guitar player on that song, which I forgot to mention, was Jeff Beck, the amazing Jeff Beck. And the bass player was Will Lee, or Bill Lee, who was an amazing bass player, played on so many albums, Chaka Khan albums, Diana Ross albums, and he was one of the main bass players on The Late Show with David Letterman. So he was in that band with all those amazing musicians on The Late Show with David Letterman. So you are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, also on the World Wide Web on CKUT.ca. And we're basically out of time, so we're going to say bye-bye. And I might leave you with some more soul-type music. What would I have here in CD number two? Let's see. Oh, yeah. Some Etta James. That's what we'll leave you with today. All right. Here's live Etta James.
Been crazy.